Welcome to Uncommon Knowledge. I'm Peter Robinson. By the way, be sure to join us on Facebook at facebook.com/UNC Knowledge. facebook.com/UNC Knowledge. You can submit questions, comments, and suggestions for guests. A distinguished political scientist, Tim Grossclose, is the Marvin Hoffenberg Professor of American Politics at the University of California at Los Angeles. Dr. Grossclose has also taught at Caltech, Stanford, Carnegie Mellon, Ohio State, and Harvard. His new book, Left Turn, How Liberal Media Bias Distorts the American Mind. Tim Grossclose, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Segment one, PQs. Tim, for years and years and years, conservatives have all been saying the media is biased. And liberals have all been saying, oh yeah, prove it. Along comes Tim Grossclose, and you proved it. Right? Isn't that the point?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, sure, so let's go through the methodology. This is important because you were methodological. Mm-hmm. You are a social scientist. The political quotient, I'm quoting from Left Turn, the political quotient, or PQ, is a device I've constructed to measure political views in a precise, objective, and quantitative way. Tell us about the PQ.
It's all based on roll call votes in Congress. And in fact, if anyone wants to go to my website, timgrossclose.com, I have a 40-question quiz. The book has a 10-question quiz. They can look. I've collapsed these roll call votes in Congress, summarized them, and let citizens decide what is their PQ.
So you take roll call votes over how long a period?
Well, the one on my website is only 2009, but I've done this for politicians, and those go from 1947 to 2009.
Okay, so you start as a kind of peg or anchor for the PQ with elected officials,
right,
and the way they have voted.
Right.
So who says whether this or that vote on this or that issue is liberal or conservative? How do you establish the spectrum of views?
Good question. These are based on a liberal interest group called the Americans for Democratic Action. And political scientists have been using ADA scores for years, since 1947.
Okay, so you're not scoring it.
Right.
That is to say, you're constructing a device, but it is derivative from somebody else's opinion.
That's right.
About whether a vote is liberal or conservative.
That's right. There's a little technical issue. We have to convert the scores to different years. It's the same issue that teachers have when they want to make two tests equally difficult. They might curve the test. And I did a paper with Jim Snyder, who's at Harvard now, and Steve Levitt, the Freakonomics author, when Levitt was actually a grad student. We worked on this. And that's the PQ scores are based on ADA scores. With
ADA
that,
stands for again?
Americans for Democratic Action.
All right.
With that minor conversion to make the years comparable, which had the help of Steve Levitt and Jim Snyder.
All right. So you know, because of the way he or she voted, what the political quotient is. You can array along a spectrum from left to right or liberal to conservative any given member of Congress.
That's right.
Correct?
That's right.
And then how do you array along that spectrum ordinary Americans?
Well,
how would okay. I? What is it about the 10 questions you present in Left Turn enables me to discover my PQ, which, by the way, would be negative, I'm sure.
Okay, well, maybe not. The 40-question quiz on my website is all the roll call votes that the ADA scored. And then we use the conversion that Levitt, Snyder, and I did. The 10-question quiz, what I did is similar to how a professor might say, well, I'd like these tests to be equally difficult. You have to find questions that are equal. Difficult. So I picked 10 questions. It was actually a precise statistical method that said these 10 questions have the average difficulty in terms of answering on the liberal side as the other 40 questions.
Okay. And we should also note that all of this, which I'm trying to tease out, but I'm a layman, so when you start talking about precise statistical methods, I think I recoil slightly. But all this, this book is based on a journal, on an article that appeared in what journal?
The media bias one was Quarterly Journal of Economics.
Which is published by?
Harvard professors.
So what you're talking about is something that made it through peer review.
That's right.
In one of the academia's, to be published in one of academia's most respected journals, right?
I think so, yes.
Okay,
yes.
So give us an idea where ordinary Americans stand on this PQ, this political quotient scale.
Okay, so by my estimate, the average PQ of the average American is 50.4.
You did that intentionally to put it at 50 as a kind of index?
Yeah, I kind of did, actually. So there's different years which would give a different number, and I intentionally picked a year. It's kind of like the same issue that happens with price inflation indexes. You have to choose a base year. And so I chose a base year, 1999. So that's the ADA's.
Okay. So if the average American, ordinary American, is at about 50, who's a very liberal politician whose name we would recognize? Where's somebody at about, who's close to 100?
Nancy Pelosi, Barney Frank.
Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank are at 100, ordinary American at 50. Where do conservative politicians fall?
Zero, for instance, would be Michelle Bachmann, Jim DeMint.
Got it. Okay. On now to segment two, SQs, the slant quotient. Again, I quote to you, Tim, from Left Turn. Quote, suppose you were given a set of stories that a media outlet reported. Now we're on to the media. But suppose instead of knowing that they were news stories, you were told they were speeches by a politician. After reading the would-be speeches, what would you guess to be the PQ of the would-be politician? I define the slant quotient, or SQ, of an outlet, of a media outlet, as the solution to that thought experiment. Take us through that thought experiment using an example.
Okay. So the New York Times, for instance, has a slant quotient of about 74. It happens that Joe Lieberman has a political quotient, a PQ, of about 74. So according to my method, the average New York Times article sounds about like the average Joe Lieberman speech.
And tell me how you... So how do you peg the New York Times at 74?
Right.
What's throwing me here again and again, I mean, in my just intuitively, politics is subjective.
Right.
And when it comes to media, you're talking about language. The medium of expression is itself subjective and nuanced, and yet you're able to say, nope, 74. Precise.
Right.
It's the precision.
You have to translate this content into data. And the way I did it, one method was to look at the think tanks that the New York Times would cite. And so when I say they have a 74, like Joe Lieberman's PQ of 74, that means when the New York Times cites think tanks, left-wing, right-wing, centrist, they pick a mix of think tanks that's about the same mix that Joe Lieberman picks when he cites think tanks on the Senate floor.
All right. You, again, in Left Turn, you say that you and your colleague developed a statistical technique that determines the SQ, slant quotient, for 20 news outlets, close quote. Now, of the 20 you examine, people can go to the book and get a chart. It's on page, it's figure 1-1. I'll hold this up briefly, but it's too complicated for a television.
That's on my website.
Okay. Yeah. So here are the findings. Of the 20 you examined, 15 proved more liberal than the ordinary American, including all three major television networks.
18 out of 20.
All the major television networks, Time Magazine, Newsweek Magazine, The New York Times, and The Los Angeles Times. Did any of that surprise you?
Given these surveys of journalists that, you know, ask them, especially there's a couple famous surveys that ask Washington correspondents, who'd you vote for last election? And the typical answer in the typical election would be 93% will say for the Democrat. This is overwhelmingly liberal. That is more liberal than Berkeley, California, Cambridge, Massachusetts. And so, you know, this is, you know, about like a typical academic department. I kind of live among the tribe of liberal academic departments. And so maybe it wasn't that surprising, just given the environment and how liberal everyone. But, you know, still, you got to measure the content, not their views in their heart.
The most liberal news pages in America, not the editorial page, but the news pages, appear in which newspaper?
It's Wall Street Journal. Yeah. Surprised. A little bit of surprise to me.
What was the date of this?
This was like early 2002, I think.
Okay. So this is well before the purchase News Corporation, by Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation.
All right. I must say another measure doesn't have them quite that liberal.
All right. And then Fox News special report with Brit Hume. Brit Hume has since retired, but the Fox News special report with Brit Hume, which liberal friends of mine consider not only conservative but venomously conservative, is actually liberal. ish, about as liberal as liberal Republican senators from Maine, Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe,
right,
correct?
Right. 40 slant quotient.
Now, how can that be? Why is it this?
Well, that was slightly right of center, actually. 40, slightly right of center. Although, in a second method I use examines the facts people reported on the Bush tax cuts.
Go ahead and take us through that.
By that measure, even Special Report was slightly liberal. So
what facts were they reporting?
How did you take
that as a case, as one of the case studies which you do in Left Turn, the Bush tax cuts and how it's reported?
Okay. At the time, liberals were saying, oh, if you look at the tax cuts, the rich are going to receive a disproportionate amount, a dollar amount of the tax cuts. And that was true. But on the other hand, there was another equally true fact that conservatives were talking about, and that is after the tax cuts, the tax system would actually be more progressive, that in terms of percentage terms, as in terms of percent of people's taxes, the poor were getting a bigger cut than the rich. And so afterward, the rich would end up paying a greater share of the taxes than they were before. So that's a second fact.
And Fox News emphasized the first fact?
Slightly more, actually, yeah. Slightly more than the second, yes.
Okay. On to segment three. Why it matters, again from Left Turn. Until a half a dozen years or so ago, I was largely a media effects non-believer. Like many other social scientists, I found it difficult to believe that voters could be systematically fooled into thinking and voting against their natural tastes and values. I have since abandoned those views.
I'm a media effects believer now.
Why?
You know what happened on Stanford campus, maybe 200 yards where we sit right now? I was at a conference here on the media, and it was in between sessions. I was talking to this guy. I wasn't even thinking about our conversation. I was about to give my presentation, a little nervous. And this guy's name is Stefano Della Vigna. He's an economics professor at Berkeley. I thought he's a grad student. I wasn't really listening to him. And then all of a sudden, he started telling me about this natural experiment that he was going to do. He was going to look to see where he and his co-author, I looked to see where Fox News entered in the late 90s. Now you think, oh, Fox would like to enter conservative markets. Well, it turns out that's not quite true. In the late 90s, they really didn't have much choice where to enter. They had to make these deals with cable providers
right,
like AT&T, and AT&T didn't pick markets according to political beliefs. So it was almost like an experiment. You know, it was almost random, the markets
right,
they would enter. And he said, we're going to look to see how people vote. Does this change how people vote? And I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm a media effects agnostic. Your study is going to decide how I believe.
In other words, before Fox News is available in a given market, if media has an effect, you would expect people to vote in a certain way.
Right.
And then after Fox News becomes available, you might see a difference in the voting pattern.
Right.
That's basically the experiment.
Right. It's okay, a little more than that you could say, George Bush, it was the difference between the 2000 election and 1996 election. So you have to say, well, George Bush did a little bit better than Bob Dole.
Right.
But on average, he did something like 4 points better. And then the question was, did the people in the Fox News areas do a little bit better than that 4%?
I see.
And Della Vigna and his co-author found exactly that, that it really did affect. People did vote slightly more conservative.
Okay. Now, on to a gigantic claim, maybe the most arresting claim in Left Turn. Quote, now we just talked about a little experiment in a few cable TV markets. Fox News on its best day still only has 2 million viewers, but listen to what Tim Grossclose contends. Quote, my results suggest that media bias aids Democratic candidates about 8 to 10 percentage points in a typical election. I find, for instance, that if media bias didn't exist, deep breath, then John McCain would have defeated Barack Obama 56-42 instead of losing 53-46. Oh, come on. How can you know such a thing? How can you know such a thing?
I have to admit, there's a lot of assumptions. There's the
well, take us through it. Take us through it.
The whole idea, partly, is to try to come up with an aggregate measure of media effects, and I have something that I call the media lambda. And here's the idea. So I'm going to need my hands to
go ahead.
I'll
get out of the way.
So the idea is, if the media slant is here, and by my measure, its average slant quotient is about a 58, including everything, talk radio, cable TV, everything, which is about 8 points left of center. And I say, well, okay.
Can you, hold on. Let's get the methodology right, because it's of the essence of this book. This book is important because you go at things methodologically. How do you compare the effect of Rush Limbaugh? How do you weight a Rush Limbaugh against, say, a New York Times?
Okay.
Rush Limbaugh has so and so many listeners. The Times has so and so many readers. How do you weight that?
It all came from a Gallup survey that asked people, where do you get your news? And so from the survey,
so you weight them purely by numbers of listeners or readers. Is that right?
Well, it's how they reported where they get their news.
Okay.
So it wasn't actual audience share. And you got to be careful, because if it's audience share, there's some people who are watching TV while doing the dishes,
Right.
So I think it's better to use this recall measure, where people say where they get their news. So
right.
That's what that's based on.
All right. So get us now to this huge margin in favor of Democrats.
So PQ of Rush Limbaugh, I think, was something like a 5 or 10, very conservative, right? PQ of national newspapers is something like 65 or 70. Do a big weighted average of all that, and I get about 58.
Okay.
Which is left of center, but not that left of center. Remember, a Joe Lieberman speech is
74,
right? So if that's where the media is, if the media is at 58, and we know the average voters is about 50. And what I posit in this is that, well, let's have a simple model. Let's assume that the average voter has two forces tugging on him, the media, which may be pulling him to the left, and his natural views, which may be to the right. And so if the media really can pull us to the left, as this Delavigna study showed, has an effect, then what that means is that 50 PQ that we see in the average voter is artificial. It's been pulled a little bit to the left, and we don't know how far. And I said, well, let's assume that there's two forces pulling on it. There's the natural views, which we don't know where they are, but they're pulling this way, the media's pulling this way, and they're somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Through looking at some of these academic studies measuring the aggregate effect of the media, I find what I call the media lambda. It says that the effect of the media is about 7/10 of those forces. The effect of your own natural views is only 3/10 of those forces. Okay, so that's a bold statement. It says the media has more of an effect on us than things like our parents, our DNA, or upbringing. Okay, but if that's true, that, if here's the natural views, here's where the 50 that we see, here's the 58, the natural views have to be 7/10 of the distance here. So it's from there, it's just an algebra problem to say, what is that number?
But this notion that the media has more of an effect on us, that it's nurture, so to speak, rather than nature, and that the nurture is being done by the Sulzberger family that owns the New York Times, for example. Are you positing that sounds like something that's harder to measure in and of itself. That's a derivative measurement of a derivative measurement of solid is it?
That's a fair point. And but it all comes from these three academic studies that I look
right.
at. So I look to see, with, for instance, that Delavigna study. So they are actually able to look in these Fox News neighborhoods
right.
and say and I can say, well, the slant quotient changed about 0.9 points.
Because of the presence of Fox.
Mm-hmm.
The average slant quotient of all media in those neighborhoods,
And then we could say, how did the political quotient change? We could look at actual election results to compute that. And that was about 0.85, something like this. So I can say, you change the slant quotient, something like 0.9 or 0.95. The political quotient will change something like 0.8 or 0.85. The
right.
ratio of that is something like 0.8. I average three of these studies to say 0.7 is about my estimate of exactly.
So every time you go at it, and you go at it as systematically and objectively and as quantitatively as you can, you come up with a result that the media is dragging the country to the left, and substantially so.
Right.
Segment 4, fixing it, left turn. Quote, a lot here you have to defend, Tim. I spent the first 10 years of my career as a congressional scholar. which is where a lot of people wish you had remained, I'm sure. The more I studied politicians, the more I respected them. Let me repeat that to our astonished listeners. The more I studied politicians, the more I respected them.
That's true.
I spent the next 8 years as a media scholar. The more I studied journalists, the less I respected them. The remedies that I suggest involve ways to make journalists more like politicians. Step one, why did you come to respect politicians as you studied them?
You know, partly it's just studying Congress. So it's one, it's amazing how transparent they are with their views, how upfront they are. I've always respected that. The other thing, I spent 10 days following a state senator in Maryland. His name's Alex Mooney. He's now the chairman of the Republican Party of Maryland. And I had taught his brother, so he allowed me access. I followed him everywhere. And just watching him and the other state senators, I was really impressed. One, just how nice they are, how personal they are. And the other thing is how well they get along with each other. Actually, even though
even they're deep divides.
Yeah, yeah. You know, for instance, Chris Van Hollen was there when I followed Alex Mooney. And Alex Mooney, I remember him first whenever he would talk about other state senators, he would always emphasize the areas on which he agrees with them. It was kind of amazing, including he got to Chris Van Hollen and he said, you know, on this one, I don't agree with him on anything. He said, but he's just such a nice guy. He said, he's almost dangerous because you almost start agreeing with him. Because, and I was kind of amazed.
So the discipline of politics, at least in the legislature, seems somehow or other to attract or to reinforce transparency.
Right. Also, they have to get along with people that are not like-minded.
Right. They have to keep reaching out in order
in
to
respect,
get...
respect. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Right.
And what's wrong with journalists?
Well, journalists are the opposite on both those two. So I have a long quote from Martha Raddatz once. She kind of got blindsided.
Martha Raddatz is?
ABC, at least was White House correspondent.
Okay.
She's on C-SPAN, I think it was Washington Journalist call-in show. And a viewer called in and said, well, what are your views? And who'd you vote for last election? And she was kind of dumbfounded and says, well, I can't tell you that. We don't do that. That's just not done among journalists. And it occurred to me, could you imagine a politician saying that?
Right.
You know, where do you stand on partial birth abortion? A politician saying, I can't tell you that.
I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. That would never happen.
Right.
So they're more transparent. And the other thing is just that they, they're as I said, they're forced to get along with the other side. And in a newsroom where it votes something like 93-7, lots of the journalists are living in places like Manhattan where, you know, their neighbors are not conservative either. They probably just very rarely interact with Republicans or conservative.
Okay. So you have two suggestions. One is mingle with conservatives, left turn. Journalists should interact more with conservatives. I'm not suggesting that government mandate this, only that journalists engage in some self-regulation and do this on their own. They should consider that even the most liberal members of Congress interact very frequently with conservatives, close quote. So what do you want? You want somebody who writes for Slate or the New York Times to do what? Go to church socials in Topeka? What?
I almost literally suggested that in there. In the chapter of the book, I talk about what I call the anti-newsroom. I look for a county that votes the opposite of a newsroom, 93-7 for the Republican. You basically can't find such a county, but the one that comes closest is Washington County, Utah, which is in the southwest corner, very, very conservative. Everyone's Mormon. It was founded by these Confederate sympathizers, and there's lots of things. His name's Dixie. And I interviewed a man named Tom Siegmuller. It was in my quest to find the most conservative person in the area. It turns out he probably wasn't, but still, he's pretty conservative. Owns a gun shop, and he volunteered.
Good sign, all right. Living in the corner of Utah, owner of a gun. Go ahead. Yep.
So I suggested, you know, if you're a journalist, you want to see the opposite. You know,
right.
You know how you see conservatives. You know, here's how conservatives see a newsroom. If you would go to Washington County, interact with conservatives there. I suggested, yeah, I'll take a vacation. Then this gun shop owner, Tom Siegmuller, said,
so
yeah, sure, I'd give people a tour.
When I was in college, it used to be the thing, if kids had money, I didn't, but if kids had money, they'd go to Europe, they'd get the Eurail pass and broaden their education. So what you're suggesting is that journalists from Washington, from the corridor, the Acela corridor there, from Washington up to New York, ought to tour Utah and Montana and Kansas.
If you watch Mr. Smith Goes to Washington,
yes.
What is the bill that got him in trouble? He had this boys' camp, and he suggested same thing. Have people come from the cities into this place and interact and mingle with each other. So
okay. Suggestion two, political transparency, quoting again from Left Turn. Journalists are very secretive about their views and those of their colleagues. Such secretiveness has become something of an institutional norm. Meanwhile, a contrasting norm of transparency exists among politicians, close quote. So you mentioned this in the book, and I was searching my mind, as best I can recall, is the only instance of this I've ever seen. But when Michael Kinsley was still editing Slate, he had a poll of his newsroom, who was going to vote for, what was it?
McCain and Obama. I think they did it for earlier elections.
Oh, they
too.
Did? And mm-hmm. he just posted it online. Mm-hmm. Here's the way the folks who work at our operation vote. And mm-hmm. of course, it was overwhelmingly for the Democrat.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there was that. That's your standard of honesty.
Yeah. And I said that there are some paragons of transparency. First, everyone in talk radio. So Rush Limbaugh, Alan Colmes.
You sure know where they stand.
Agree on nothing, but they are very transparent. And the other is the people at Slate Magazine.
So, Tim, why doesn't the market in which, by the way, right up front, in Left Turn, you disclose your own political views, and mm-hmm. your PQ is 13.
Right.
You are not a liberal man.
That's right.
You believe in, among other things, the free market.
That's right.
Why doesn't the free market mandate, why doesn't an editor feel pressure as part of his job to send his journalists out to see what the other side looks like? Why don't they all post at least once a year a poll of their own news? They don't even have to, I think you'd be satisfied, they wouldn't have to say which reporter voted for which candidate, but just how many, just a poll of their newsroom, right?
Right.
So why
right.
doesn't the market insist on that?
Well, you know, it used to be that way. You know, it used to be all newspapers, for instance, you know, around 1920, just about all of
they
them.
They all have known political views.
Right, exactly. And that may be where we're heading again. That's an excellent question, why the market hasn't done this. I think the market may. I could imagine one newsroom, say Fox News, decides to do this. We're going to publish the PQs.
But you realize, what you're suggesting here with this publishing PQs and is a direct attack on the Walter Cronkite ideal
right.
of neutrality.
It is.
And dispassionate remove from events.
Well, no, I would say...
You think that's a false... You think that's a lot of phony baloney?
I'd say they still should be dispassionate and objective, but on a website somewhere, report. Here's my political views.
Segment five, how come? From Left Turn, quote, in a typical presidential election, only 7% of Washington correspondents vote for the Republican, close quote. Why? What is the deep structure, deep sociological structure that accounts for this phenomenon that journalists are overwhelmingly liberal?
You know, I don't know and I don't really address in the book, but here's what I think. I think there's something in the DNA of liberals that makes them go into fields like journalism, academia, the arts. There's something about creative fields where there's kind of no objective standards. You know, the opposite would be, you know, an engineer or a small businessman who has the market. You know, it's an objective standard. Am I making a profit? And these other fields, also where you have to be a little extra creative, there's something about liberals really seek those fields.
All right. Now, what about considering the problem over, and I know that I'm dragging you away from the book, but I just want to know what you think about this stuff. Over time, before Franklin Roosevelt, editorial pages at least, first of all, the notion of liberal versus conservative, as you point out, lots of newspapers in New York City, when Tom Wolfe started his career in journalism in New York City as recently as the late 50s and early 60s, there were, as I recall, 8 functioning newspapers in New York City, and they had distinct, or Britain Today, The Guardian is on the left, The Telegraph is on the right, The Times is sort of, okay. But before FDR, editorial pages tended to be to the right. News pages, what changed? In other words, you get in the 60s, you seem to get more, the profession becomes dominated by liberals beginning about the 60s. How come?
I'm not sure. There's a lot of speculation. There's a book by James Hamilton. The printing press did it. Some people say, oh, it was TV, the three networks, and all of a sudden when there's a notion of this objective journalism, where everyone at least pretends to be objective, still liberals are the ones that flock to that area, and then after a while.
And what are you doing in academia?
Yeah, good question. Yeah.
You talk about this. Here's a few statistics I found. The Center for Responsive Politics. 92% of employees at the University of Chicago who made political contributions in the last round made them to Democrats. And William and Mary, it was 99-1 in the UC system. University of California was 9-1. So what are you doing there?
Good question. My wife sometimes asks me about this. I'll come home complaining. Why do you stay in academia? I have got a gene that makes me love research. And I recognize this somewhere around in junior high. So I've got the conservative gene, but also the gene to love research. And so
is it just that you're peculiar, or are you the leading edge of a generational change?
I think I'm peculiar.
Dashing all my hopes here.
Hopefully not.
Okay. Now, let me tell you something. This book is getting attacked by all the people you'd expect to attack it, all the people who don't want to hear the news that it delivers, right? Mm-hmm. But the notion that the media, the mainstream media, is biased to the left, to me that's no surprise, of course. That's just, okay, what you do is pin it down beautifully. Here's the real outrage in this book. And it is an outrage. A moment ago in an earlier segment, I quoted you saying that you didn't used to believe that voters can be systematically fooled. That's the phrase you use, systematically fooled. Mm-hmm. And now you believe they do. Yeah. And that is a direct attack on the notion of democracy itself. Abraham Lincoln was wrong. You can fool all the people all the time. And the founders were mistaken. Americans are unfit for self-government. That's the fundamental finding of left turn.
Good point. I would say that they can only be fooled partially. I have a media lambda 0.7. They can only be fooled 70% of the way that journalists
so,
want to fool.
So, but, so the proper way to look at this is not to say, oh my goodness, people are voting Democratic 8 points more than they would otherwise. The proper way to say, well, that may be so, but if you could fool all the people all the time, we'd have been communist by about 1967.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's right.
I'm trying to find if this has troubled you at all. That you just take Democratic theory and give it a swift kick.
Yeah. Not only that. One thing I should say, though, the other thing is that if somehow you could make people aware of this, that we don't discount the bias as well as we should. We don't think about it, I think, as rationally as we should. If all of a sudden we could, if places like the Media Research Center and the counterpart Media Matters, if both of them are kind of battling against each other, and they can convince voters to be perfectly rational in discounting this bias, that would do the same thing that I talk about in the book about as if we could eliminate media bias. That media lambda that I say is 0.7, that would go to zero if we were perfectly rational. And if I'm right, all the statistics, calculations in my book, that also would make America move from thinking and voting about like an Iowa voter to thinking and voting about like a Texas or Kentucky voter.
Tim Grossclose. Left Turn, How the Liberal Media Bias Distorts the American Mind is available on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. And your website is?
TimGrossClose.com.
Let's spell it. Yeah, Tim is obvious. GrossECLOSE.com.
That's
Tim,
right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm Peter Robinson for Uncommon Knowledge. Thanks for joining us.